Acharya, Asatara Satashi, Shimada Sivanga, Sesi Bhakti Vedanta Swami Maharaj Prabhupada Ki Jai.
Jai.
Khan founder Acharya Shri Prabhupada Ki Jai. Nasukha Vrinda Ki Jai. Nam Acharya Shri Haridas Thakur Ki Jai. Prem Shikaho Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Adwaita Gadadhar Shri Vasudeva Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Ki Jai. Shri Radha Krishna Go Gopinath Shyamakunda Radha Kunda Giri Govardhana Ki Jai. Vrindavan Dhamma Ki Jai, Mathura Dhamma Ki Jai, Navadvip Mayapur Dhamma Ki Jai, Jagannath Puri Dhamma Ki Jai, Gangamaya Jamuna Devi Ki Jai, Bhakti Devi Ki Jai, Tulsi Maharani Ki Jai, Samaveta Bhakti Vrinda Ki Jai, Gaur Premanande. All glories to the assembled devotees.
Hare Krishna.
All glories to the assembled devotees.
Hare
Krishna.
All glories to the assembled devotees.
Hare
Krishna. All glories to Sri Guru and Gauranga. All glories to Srila
Prabhupada.
Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasthaya Bhutale Srimate Bhakti Vedanta Swami Niti Namane Namaste Sarasvati Deve Gauravani Pracharane Nirvasesa Sanyavani Paskachade Satarane Vandeham Sri Guru Sri Yuta Padakamalam Sri Gurun Vaishnavamscha Shri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Raghunatam Vitam Sam Sajivam Sadvaitam Sadvadutam Parijana Sahita Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padam Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakam Vitam Cha Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya
Om Namo
Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
This is August 2nd, 2011, Skype class from Hilo, Hawaii, Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 1, Chapter 11, Lord Krishna's Entrance to Dwarka, Text 25. I should say, Ramananda, my son's also using the internet right now to give a presentation for people he works for on the other end of the country. If this connection gets really bad, just write me a message so I won't be able to hear you in the middle. And okay. Then switch to regular phone if necessary. So just let me know.
Okay,
the verse. Nityam nirikshamananam.
Nityam nirikshamananam.
Yadapi dwarka kalkasam.
Yadapi dwarka kalkasam.
Navitripyantihi drisha.
Navitripyanti hidrisha.
Shriyodamangamachutam.
Shriyodamangamachutam.
Please chant.
Nityam nirikshamananam.
Nityam nirikshamananam.
Yadapi dvara kalkasham.
Yadapi dvarka kalkasham.
Navitripyanti hidrisha.
Navitripyanti hidrisha.
Shriyodamangam achutam.
Shriyodamangam achutam. Nityam nirikshamananam.
Nityam Narikshamanam
Yadati Dvara Kaukasham
Yadati Dvara Kaukasham
Navitripyanti Hidrisha
Navitripyanti Hidrisha
Shriyo Dhammangamachutam
Shriyo Dhammangamachutam
Nityam Nirikshamananam
Nityam
Nirikshamananam
Yadapi Dvarakaukasam
Yadapi Dvarakaukasam
Navitripyanti Hidrisha
Navitripyanti Hidrisha
Shriyodama Namgam Achyutam
Shriyodamangam Achyutam
Nityam
Nirikshamananam
Yadapi
Dvarakaukasam
Navitripyanti
Hidrisha
Shriyo
Dhammangamachyutam
Nityam
Nirikshamananam
Yadapi
Dvarakaukasam
Navrityanti Hidrisha
Navitripyanti Hidrisha
Shriyo Dhammangamachyutam
Shriyo Dhammangamachyutam
Nityam
Nityam
Regularly
Regularly
Always
Always
Nirikshamananam
Nirikshamananam
Of those who look at him.
Yet.
Although.
Api.
In spite of.
Dwaraka Okasam. The inhabitants of Dwarka.
Nah.
Never. Vichipyanti. Satisfied.
He.
Exactly.
Drishaha.
Sight.
Shriyaha.
Beauties.
Dhamma Angam. The bodily reservoir. Achyutam. The infallible.
So, Prabhus, at this time, we need everyone to please mute themselves. And just give me 1 second here to switch over. We'll be all set. Okay.
Translation and purport by Srila Prabhupada. The inhabitants of Dwarka were regularly accustomed to look upon the reservoir of all beauty, the infallible Lord, yet they were never satiated. Purport. When the ladies of the city of Dwarka got up on the roofs of their palaces, they never thought that they had previously many times seen the beautiful body of the infallible Lord. This indicates that they had no satiation in desiring to see the Lord. Anything material seen for a number of times ultimately becomes unattractive by the law of satiation. The law of satiation acts materially, but there is no scope for it in the spiritual realm. The word infallible is significant here because although the Lord has mercifully defended on earth, he is still infallible. The entities are fallible because when they come in contact with the material world, they lack their spiritual identity. And thus, the body materially obtained becomes subjected to birth, growth, transformation, situation, deterioration, and annihilation under the laws of nature. The Lord's body is not like that. He descends as he is, and is never under the laws of the material modes. His body is the source of everything that be, the reservoir of all beauties beyond our experience. No one, therefore, is satiated by seeing the transcendental body of the Lord, because there are always manifestations of newer and newer beauties. The transcendental name, form, qualities, entourage, etc., are all spiritual manifestations, and there is no satiation in chanting the holy name of the Lord. There is no satiation in discussing the qualities of the Lord, and there is no limitation of the entourage of the Lord. He is the source of all and is limitless. Nityam nirikshamananam yadapi dwarkanaukatsam na vritripyantihidrisha shriyodamangamachutam. The inhabitants of Dwarka were regularly accustomed to look upon the reservoir of all beauty, the infallible Lord, yet they were never satiated. So we have two seemingly contradictory inclinations. We want what's familiar and comfortable and known, and we also want newness and mystery and excitement. We want both things. Right? This is why people like to travel and they like to come home. Both. And one of my friends recently went on a visit for a festival, saw some old friends, and she was writing to me. It was so much fun going to the festival, seeing all my friends, doing this thing, doing that thing, and it's wonderful to come home. Now, in studies of personality, each of us has an inclination more towards predictability or towards change and variety. So there's certain people who really like to have their lives predictable. They like to do the same thing every day. They like to have things scheduled. And we all know of people like this. And that personality is very useful in Krishna consciousness. Just like I know of one devotee at Bhaktivedanta Manor that in well over 30 years, maybe close to 40 years, however long the devotees have had the property there, he's only left the property two or three times. And he's done the same service every day for decades. He's one of the pujaris. He's actually really an assistant to the pujaris. So he gets the deity's clothes together and their jewelry together. And he pretty much does the same thing every day for decades, staying in the same place. And then we know people who really thrive on change. Right? They get restless if they're doing the same thing for too long. They have to always be going to new places. And I'm sure we know devotees like this, that people who don't even know, you know, what preaching program they're going to be going to next, right? Their itinerary is constantly changing. They're always taking up new challenges, always doing things that are meeting new people, doing things that have novelty to them. But although we can find that some people are extreme one or the other, and most of us have an inclination more towards one or the other. In other words, most of us have an inclination more towards novelty or more towards sameness. Still, every human being wants some of each. We want things that are safe and secure and familiar and known, where we can be ourselves, where we can relax, where we can be in home. And we also want things that are challenging and interesting and new. We want something fresh. We don't want to just have the same thing over and over and over again. So both of those are together inconceivably in the Lord. So Krishna is both. Right? He is the same Lord eternally in the past, present, and future. The soul doesn't change into something else. Right? There's eternal stability and comfort. There's a sense of going home, of being with one's eternal shelter. that Krishna, one of Krishna's qualities is that he's dependable. At the same time, he's ever fresh. He's ever new. So this is very nicely, this contradiction is very nicely encapsulated in the Brahma Samhita. Advaitam achutam anadim anantarupam ajyam purana purusham navayovanam cha vedeshu durlabham adurlabham atma bhakto govindam adipurusham tam maham bhajami. Advaitam, he's non-dual. Achutam, we have here in this verse again, achutam. There's no fault in him. He never loses. Of course, sometimes he appears to lose to the cowherd boys, but he never loses. Advaitam achutam anadi. He has no beginning. Anantarupam, which means either that his form is unlimited or he has unlimited forms. Ajyam, he is the beginning. He has no beginning, he is the beginning. Ajyam purana purusham, he's the oldest person. Navayovanam cha, but he's always a fresh youth. So he's the oldest. He's from the beginning. He's the shelter. He's the solid foundation of on which everything rests. But he's always fresh. Fresh youth doesn't mean only that he's eternally 15. Maybe he is Narayana 20. He's a fresh youth. He hasn't even grown a beard. It's still very soft and delicate. Not only that, but Navayovanam also means that everything about him is always fresh. Everything is always new. Everything is always expanding. So how are these things possible? How is that possible? Vedeshu durlabham adurlabham atma bhakto. Just with intellectual understanding, one cannot grasp it. Intellectual understanding, you're coming up with a counterfeit. When we say realization, realization has the word real. To factually understand this, it has to be realized. It has to be revealed. And just understanding with the mind, it's a reflection. It's a counterfeit. And just by studying the Vedas, it's very difficult. Durlabham. Durlabh means very difficult. Prabhupada named one devotee child, Gopal Krishna Maharaj, when he was a householder. He had a little boy, and Prabhupada named him Durlabh. Krishna is very difficult. Al Durlabham Atma Bhakto. If you love Krishna, then it's not difficult. If you love Krishna, then you can understand these things. Oh, there's Krishna, my beloved, who's my shelter, who's always been my beloved, who is my beloved, who will always be my beloved. Oh, but I don't feel like I've ever seen him before. Like it says here, they've never thought that they had previously many times seen the beautiful body of the infallible Lord. Now, it wasn't that they thought, oh, here's some new person. Who is this person? It wasn't like that. They recognized, they're recognizing, here is my beloved Lord. Here's the Prince of Dwarka. Here's my most lovable personality. Here is my shelter. Here is my master. So they recognize that it's Krishna, and yet they feel like they've never seen him before. So we are all seeking after this. We are all seeking after that which is solid and secure and at the same time fresh, at the same time exciting. And Prabhupada here is contrasting the material urge and the spiritual urge and emphasizing that Krishna's situation is fully spiritual. So let's look at the material and the spiritual. So materially, everything is a reflection. We were just speaking on Sunday on the third verse of Das Mula Tattva Bhaktivinoda Thakur, where he's talking about Krishna's energies. And he describes a matrix of where the three energies of the Chit Shakti, the Jiva Shakti, and Maya Shakti interact with Sandini Shakti, Samvit Shakti, and Haladini Shakti. In other words, there's Sundini Shakti manifested in the Chit Shakti. There's Sundini Shakti manifest in the Jiva Shakti. There's Sundini Shakti manifest in the Maya Shakti. There's Sambit Shakti manifest in the Chit Shakti. There's Sambit Shakti manifest in the Jiva Shakti. There's Sambit Shakti manifest in the Maya Shakti. And there's Ladini Shakti manifest in the Chit Shakti. Ladini Shakti manifest in the Jiva Shakti. And Ladini Shakti manifest in the Maya Shakti. And each has different manifestations. So you have nine kinds of three into three. You have nine basic kinds of manifestations. But overall, when the Sandini, Samvit, and Ladini, that's eternity, knowledge, and bliss, when they manifest in the internal potency, the Chikchakti, they're manifesting in full. When they manifest in the Jiva Shakti, that's you and me, the living entities, they manifest minutely. And when they manifest in the Maya Shakti, the illusory, the external energy, Bahiranga Shakti, they're manifesting as a reflection. They're manifesting as a reflection. For example, the Sandini Shakti, the Shakti of Bala, strength, or existence, Sat, when it manifests in the internal energy, it manifests as the Lord's abode, the Lord's name, the Lord's form, the Lord's qualities, the Lord's pastimes. When it manifests in this Maya Shakti, it manifests as our material bodies, our material names, our material qualities, the 14 planetary systems, the material universes, and that's all a reflection. The Samvit Shakti, when it manifests in the spiritual Shakti, it manifests as spiritual moods, and when it manifests in the Maya Shakti, it manifests as worries and anxieties and thoughts and goals. These are all a reflection. So this analogy is often given of the real and the reflection. The real and the reflection. So let's imagine for a moment that we have a wonderful meal full of many, many varieties. There's 10 different kinds of bread. There's baked bread, there's pan-fried bread, there's deep-fried bread, there's soda bread, there's yeast bread, there's sourdough bread, there's bread made from wheat, from rye, from barley, from rice and beans. So many varieties of breads. And then there's so many varieties of rice. There's oriental sticky rice made into different shapes. There's basmati rice and jasmine rice. And there's rice cooked with whey and rice cooked with water, rice mixed with yogurt, rice mixed with coconut, rice mixed with raisins and pistachios. Then there's all different kinds of vegetables. There's stuffed eggplant and fried eggplant and eggplant pakoras and so forth and so on. All different kinds of savories, all different kinds of sweets. And it's laid out on a table that's covered with a silk cloth that's embroidered with different scenes. It's embroidered with scenes of people in gardens and scenes of people in cities. And then there's all sorts of different eating utensils, different sizes of forks and spoons and cups and plates. The chairs are very beautifully done. And the people eating at the meal, there's a wide variety of people, all good company. So all variety of enjoyment. Oh, there's nice music playing in the background, and there's a live band, and they're playing different kinds of music, different styles. Then let's say that above this whole scene, there the ceiling is covered with mirror tiles. You ever seen that, mirror tiles on the ceiling? We have that at the Boston Temple by the altar. So in the reflection, all the variety is there. All the different kinds of food and the different scenes on the tablecloth and the different people and the musicians playing. But wherever you touch the ceiling, your experience is basically the same. It appears to be full of variety of enjoyment, but the experience is basically the same. So this analogy is also given in the when Prahlad Maharaj says, chewing the chewed. You're tasting something that you've already tasted, and other people have already tasted. The juice is out of it. It looks like something, but there's no juice. Chewing the chewed. Or another example is given in the Shastra of the same preparation is put in many different kinds of pots. So you take exactly the same food and you put it in a clay pot, you put it in a china pot, you put it in a plastic pot. Of course, the Shastra doesn't say plastic. Put it in a gold pot, an iron pot, a silver pot, a jeweled pot. So you think there's so much variety, but it's actually the same thing. What are we experiencing here? We're just experiencing a reflection of Krishna's energy. Anything that appears to be a value, if it's without relation to me, has no substance. Know it to be my illusory energy, that reflection that appears to be in darkness. So if you're in a dark room and there's a reflective surface, it may look like there's a light in the room, but actually it's just a mirror. It's not something that's really going to provide any substantial illumination. So because what we're dealing with here is a reflection of variety, it's an illusory world. It's a world where things are not what they seem. It looks like there's a feast on the table, but when you go to eat it, you find you're simply dealing with a mirror. Another analogy given is that of a dream. In a dream, you may think that you're doing so many things, but really you're not factually doing them. It's just happening within the mind. And even our waking experiences are only happening within the mind. They're all, as Krishna says, mental concoction. All our material desires that come from mental concoction. So that's why there's, as Prabhupada says here, what does he call it? The law of satiation? I think he calls it that. What does he say here? All right, so everything in this material world, I can't find again the purport. Everything in this material world has its law of satiation. When satiated means you don't want it anymore. It actually, after a while, becomes disgusting. So psychologists are very aware of this, that in this world, things very quickly lose their ability to give pleasure or pain and very, very quickly become boring and after a while become even disgusting. So Sri Prahlad Prabhu was giving a seminar about this based on psychology. And he was saying that studies have shown that if somebody gets in an accident and becomes paralyzed, for the first 6 months, they're less happy than they were before the accident. And after 6 months, they end up going back to where they were before with the same amount of happiness and unhappiness. And similarly, if somebody wins the lottery, for the first 6 months, they're happier. And then after that, they gradually go back to their pre-winning level of happiness and distress. Now, we all have this experience, right? That's why we're called conditioned. We get conditioned to something. You buy a new something, you get a new situation, and it's very exciting. And after a while, it just becomes part of the background. It becomes inconsequential. You hardly even notice it anymore. Or it becomes boring. Or after a while, you don't even like it anymore. You become disgusted with it. I mean, if we can think in terms of food, you know, if you take your favorite food and you have it all the time, it's no longer very thrilling. And if you eat it too much, you'll actually become revolted by it. Become satiated. Oh, now I have to find something new. Now I have to find something new. Right, this is happening, especially in the modern world, with human relationships. So much divorce and remarriage. Right, oh, now I'm tired of this person. Prabhupada talks about this in the Bhagavatam, that the very person who's attracted to you when they're young, that when they're older and now they may have so many demands and this and that, now you feel repulsed by that very same person. And then you think, oh, let me find somebody new. Let me find somebody new. Or some people think, you know, I see this also with devotees, who they go to some place where there's a community of devotees. And first they just see all the good things and the exciting things. And then after a few years, all they're doing is complaining. and thinking, all right, what new place can I go to? So this is the material situation of satiation. The material situation of satiation. First of all, the thing that we get pleasure from in this world, the beauty, here we're focusing on the beauty, the beauty that we're seeing or whatever we're enjoying here, it's never fully satisfying in the first place. We can never say, now I'm fully satisfied. But we get satiated. We can't. Satiated means that you can't get any pleasure from it anymore. It just, the juice is gone. There's no, it's used up. It's become empty. It's become empty. So there's a story Prabhupada tells about a high caste Brahmana who was traveling, and somehow or other he hadn't been able to get anything to eat. He was very hungry. And he happened upon the house of a very, very low-class person. And he said, please give me some food. And the low-class person said, I don't really have very much. I'm very poor. I give you what I have, but I don't have much. And the high-class Brahmana said, I don't care. Whatever you have, I'm so hungry. So the lower-class person fed the Brahmana. And the Brahmana said, I haven't satisfied my hunger. I've given up my principles. Eating this contaminated food. I've given up my principles, and yet I haven't satisfied my hunger. So that is material enjoyment in general is like that. It never gives us complete satisfaction. Maybe for a few moments. Maybe for a few moments. Maybe for 5 minutes. Maybe for an hour. Maybe even for a week. But even during that brief time that we feel, oh, I'm completely satisfied, even then we're not completely satisfied. We're not unlimitedly satisfied. We're not free of fear of losing our source of satisfaction. So we don't get fully satisfied, and then the thing loses its kick. It loses its ability to delight us. So that's the nature of the material. Why? Because it's a reflection. It's not the real thing. A reflection can't give you ultimate satisfaction, and after a while it gets really boring. Yeah. How long can you enjoy eating food that's in a reflection? So the spiritual is entirely different. Prabhupada's emphasizing here how Krishna's body is completely different. It's not subject to material changes. It's not fallible. It's the real thing. It is the reality. It is the absolute truth. It's the reservoir of everything. Therefore, it's actually fully satisfying. Without any inebrieties. There's nothing that's mitigating against the satisfaction. So material satisfaction, you know, while I'm eating my nice meal, maybe I'm worried that I'm eating too many calories. Or maybe I'm worried that the other people at the table will think I'm taking too much. Or maybe I'm worried that it'll make me tired or give me heart disease or something like that. I have some anxiety that's mixed with my pleasure. I'm never able to get full satisfaction. Spiritually, I can get full satisfaction. Because it's real, it's eternal. There's no fear mixed with it. It's enjoyed by my genuine spiritual senses, not by my material senses, which are just reflections, which are an imagined persona. And although it gives me full satisfaction, it never loses its ability to satisfy. As spiritual enjoyment, you don't come to it and say, oh, I already did that. I already know that. I already experienced that. I already got everything out of it I could get out of it. No, it's not like that. You know, materially, you can become expert at something and know it inside and out, and it's boring now. But with Krishna, it's not like that. There's always something more to see, always something more to know. Even just looking at Krishna's form. As Prabhupada says here, is always manifesting newer and newer beauties. Krishna's form is always becoming more and more and more beautiful. Krishna's philosophy is always expanding in its nuances. In fact, Krishna also likes the novelty. This dual thing that we have, that we want both security and novelty, Krishna is also like that. Krishna also likes novelty. He likes mystery. He likes discovering. Prabhupada says that even Krishna doesn't fully know himself. How is that? Because Krishna is always expanding. And as he expands, he knows himself, and then he expands more, and then there's more to know. That thrill of discovering something new. Now, Krishna has that constantly, of having some mystery to uncover. What is it? What is it? Now, they say when you're teaching, instead of saying right up front everything that you're going to, all the information you're going to give, that people are much more interested if there's a mystery. Well, how do we understand this? What's the solution to this? And people will be hanging on the edge of their seats. I mean, how many of us have watched stupid television shows or movies or read stupid books just to find out how it ends? Right? Just to get the mystery solved. So Krishna also, he's a man of constant mystery and constant solutions, constant expansions and constant relishing. Right? There we have Na Vichipyanti, right? Chipta. Chipta is to be satisfied. So they're never satisfied. This is not, again, it's not like the material. Material will never satisfy because it's unreal. In material life, one's never fully satisfied and one becomes satiated. Spiritually, you're always fully satisfied and never satiated. So just the opposite. It's very difficult for us to conceive. Vedeshu durlabham adurlabham atmabhakto. But of course, all of us who are practicing Krishna consciousness, we have some practical experience. Prabhupada says here, there's no satiation in chanting the holy name of the Lord. So we've gone to kirtans that go on for hours and hours and hours and hours. And of course, sometimes the body gets tired, or the body needs to eat. Even in Mahaprabhu's pastimes, sometimes Lord Nityananda would have to stop the Lord from dancing because he said the devotees need to rest or they need to eat. But one doesn't get tired of chanting. One doesn't say, oh, I've been chanting this Hare Krishna mantra for 30 years, let's chant something else. Right, materially, it's not like that. Materially, they have a hit song, and then they have to have another hit song, and then they have to have another hit song. It's not that they have the same hit song. Could you imagine they have the same hit song for 40 years? But we go to see the deities every day, the same deities. We don't get tired of seeing the deities. Now, we can sit and stare at the form of the deities forever and ever and ever, and stare at a picture of Krishna forever and ever and ever. So ordinarily, that's not possible. If people have some material sculpture or painting in their house, after a while they hardly even see it anymore. It just becomes part of the background. And we've had this experience in discussing the qualities of the Lord. You know, we're reading the same books over and over and over, and there's always something new. There's always something fresh. There's always something astonishing. Right? Even if you read the Bhagavad Gita 20 times, or 200 times, you always find something amazing. Wow, I don't remember Krishna saying this. Is that what it means? And Prabhupada says that we can also examine every verse from unlimited angles of vision. There's layers. And one never reaches the end. The mystery is always unfolding. At the same time, one feels satisfied. Oh, yes, now I've understood this. Oh, but now there's something more to understand. Now there's something more to understand. So it's both, that one is fully satisfied, but never satiated. And again, all of us, even beginning devotees, we have some sense of this. We have some experience of this. And the quality of our spiritual delight is quite different from the quality of our material delight. So in our daily lives, we should look for that deeper and deeper satisfaction, unsatiated satisfaction in Krishna. Look for it in the reality, not in the reflection. Now, it's understood and normal that while one is becoming a devotee, one may sometimes, due to long habits of millions and millions and millions of births, look for some satisfaction in the reflection. And again, remember, oh yeah, it's not there. Let me go to the reality. That's to be expected. That's to be expected. If ever you're trying to change a long-standing bad habit and get a new habit, so it's expected that there'll be some learning time where one sometimes slides back to the old habit and has to establish the new habit. And we should not be very critical of ourselves or others that in a learning time that this sort of thing is going to happen. But at the same time, we should be very fixed that our real happiness should be in the wonderful, seeing the wonderful beauty of the Lord, hearing the wonderful glories of the Lord, and meditating on the ever-fresh name of the Lord. And as we do that, we become a real devotee, and then we can actually understand this thing. Now we can understand this impossible contradiction that Krishna is the unchanging, non-dual, ever-existing, solid shelter. And at the same time, he is the ever-expanding, dynamic, ever-changing, ever-expressing newer and newer and finer and sweeter qualities. And the contradiction that spiritual happiness is fully satisfying in both quantity and quality. It gives unlimited satisfaction and it satisfies one's entire being. At the same time, it's always full of fresh juice, fresh rasa. It never loses its quality to satisfy, never loses its ability to satisfy, so that one is fully satisfied moment by moment by moment and still is hankering for more. So these contradictions, which is what we're seeking for materially, and of course materially we're finding exactly the opposite. Materially things are not a shelter, not solid. Even the ground is not solid. And at the same time, the so-called varieties are all just different manifestations of the same thing. And materially, things never satisfy us, and yet we become satiated. So materially, we have those disappointing contradictions, and spiritually, there are the wonderful discovering contradictions. And this we can only understand by actually going into the process. We cannot understand this simply intellectually, and our intellectual satisfaction is not what's going to give us what we're really looking for. We have to experience it. Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati says, you cannot understand how to swim by reading a manual and standing on the shore. You have to get into the water. There's just not an option. To understand this mystery, one has to swim in it. One has to immerse oneself in it. It has to become realization. It has to become one's life. To dive deeper and deeper into the name, deeper and deeper into Krishna's beauty. To see that these contradictions exist in such a wonderful way to give us the full scope of what we actually want. So I'm going to end here a little early. We can have questions, comments.
Corrections, chastisements.
Yes, Prabhus, any questions or comments? I just want to emphasize, please mute yourself unless you're going to ask a question. It's no competition for sound. So please go ahead, Prabhu.
I'll make a comment. Lovely class, as always. I was going to say that, materially, everything, all material pleasures, number one, don't satisfy and ultimately end up satiating. But that doesn't seem to be true with material pain. I remember a real basic course in neurology in college, that the pain receptors, potentially will never stop firing until for some reason they stop. Sometimes the brain will not recognize that. Like if somebody gets hurt really badly, sometimes adrenaline kicks in, and just to get yourself to safety, you may not feel the pain, but as soon as that phase is over, the pain comes back. We see some people will have like arthritic pain, for example. They'll have it for their whole life. It never satiates. It can go on and on and on and on and on and nag your whole life and never quit. But material pleasures are just so ephemeral and short acting and ultimately satiate.
Pain is a very strange phenomenon, especially physical pain. It's definitely a very peculiar phenomenon. Of course, people who have chronic pain do, in one sense, become accustomed to it. They learn how to work with it. They learn how to work around it. But yes, one never actually says, okay, I don't feel it anymore. Now, bodily pain is quite interesting.
Mother Ermila, this is a very important point. I was thinking just along the same lines as Narahari. Wonderful class, wonderful points, although some of it did go over my head, to tell you the truth, especially about Bhaktivinoda Thakur. But this one point that you made about material pleasure and pain, pain, you can get used to it after some time. I never really realize that, because it's always stressed amongst devotees in our philosophy that there's material pleasure is limited and temporary, whereas misery in the material world, there's an abundance of it. The way you said it, I'm sorry, I have to go back and listen to the recording, but it was both happiness, pain and pleasure, they come to their satiation point.
You do get to a point where the pain becomes so much a part of your existence that the way you experience it is definitely different. For example, let's look first at the subtle pain. So all of us are experiencing, if we're conditioned, an underlying fear of death, an underlying fear of loss. But it's kind of background noise. We're hardly aware of it anymore. We hardly notice it anymore. Or like where I stay here with my kids, so they have very young children, and the young children often make a lot of noise. The parents hardly notice it. Sometimes they just don't hear it at all. Sometimes one of the children's going, mommy, 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 mommy. And if you're not accustomed to it, it's really irritating. But the parents don't even hear it. This is one reason why when parents take their young children to a program, that the parents are not nearly as disturbed by the children's behavior and noise as everybody else. For the parents, it's become kind of background. So if we wanted to look at psychological pain, we do become also accustomed to it. There is also a satiation point, like these studies done of people who become paralyzed. Or if you live in a very difficult environment,
you know, if you live in a place that where things are very chaotic or noisy, or, you know, if you stay in a place like New York City where there's a lot of noise and commotion, after a while it just becomes background. You're not so much affected by it. I mean, unless you force yourself to be. But otherwise you lose your sensitivity to it. Now, there is definitely another category of physical pain that I say is a little distinct from psychological pain and mental pain, which we can definitely background. Physical pain is a lot harder to background. But it is also a fact that if one has ongoing pain, that you don't deal with it the same way as somebody who's never had that pain. You just don't. It's much more a part of your life. So it's much more, it's there, and you work around it, and you're able to go on without focusing. It doesn't have the same message to you anymore when it's ongoing. It just doesn't. Yeah. So, but definitely physical pain is in its own particular category.
All right, Krishna. Urmila Dasi Prabhu, I'm someone that experiences chronic physical pain. I have fibromyalgia, and I don't know. I don't think you ever get used to it. It just grinds you down, you know, continually. And
it definitely does.
I don't know.
It's still different. I mean, I don't have constant pain, but I have chronic pain. And I still see that it's very different from somebody who has very, very good health and has some, you know, occasional thing, that it's quite different, that how I deal with physical pain, which I have to deal with a lot, and how people who don't have to deal with a lot deal with it are quite different, how we code it, how we think about it. So, but physical pain is definitely in its own category. There's no doubt about it. Krishna Kshetra Guru has a book about the nature of physical pain, which unfortunately I was only there at that center in Croatia for a couple of days, so I never got a chance to finish it. But it's something that I really wanted to look at, how intense physical pain ends up taking away language. You know, we just start making funny noises if the pain gets really intense, and we lose consciousness of our surroundings. You know, I'd say that intense physical pain, very intense physical pain, is probably one of the closest situations that any of us get to what Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is describing as ecstasy, where in intense physical pain, we lose concern, in really intense pain. Maybe some of you have never had it, so you're not going to relate to what I'm saying. But we lose awareness of our surroundings, or we don't care about our surroundings. We don't care about where we are anymore. We don't care about how we're dressed. We don't care about how we look. We are only able to make noises you know, nothing really matters. Or whatever we're worrying about, if we're worrying about money trouble or relationship trouble or whatever, is completely forgotten or appears to be insignificant. It's quite interesting what happens in intense physical pain. But it's definitely a phenomena. I will also say, this is a very different subject matter, that any level of physical pain is not experienced if you can put your mind in a different place. That even the most intense physical pain is under the control of mental adjustment. It's something that's happening within the mind. It's also of the nature of reflection.
Well, I'd sure like to learn how to be able to do that.
Prabhupada talks about it in Teachings of Lord Kapila.
If pain's not in the head, that was my experience growing up. If I had pain, and it was in some other extremity, in my hand or my leg or my foot or something, I could block it out. But if it's in my head, like a toothache or a headache or something, or, you know, mental anxiety or whatever, if it's in my head, I couldn't do the same thing.
Yes, it's much harder. I've also had that experience, that head pain is much, much harder to block than other kinds of pain.
Mother Ermila.
It can be done, though.
I hope I can articulate this. The reason this is a particular concern to me is because it's not so much pain is the problem. What I'm thinking more of, if I can use that in relationship to desires, because in a way you have these nagging desires that are just like pain, you know, you want to be free from them, but they're nagging just like an itch. So when you said that, you know, that you can get, just like you get satiated by pleasurable things, you can also satiated by pain, if I'm using the right word. If you suppress your desires for enjoyment separately from Krishna, will they just go away? Because it seems to me like they're just always naggingly there and very difficult to get rid of.
I wouldn't put desires in the same category. The reason our desires are nagging us is that we're having means of fulfilling them that are both non-satisfying and satiating. Therefore, they keep nagging. You know, if there's an... All of our desires are... Our desires and our emotions are kind of like warning lights in a car, that there's something that needs attending to. And if you, you know, just try to disable the light, it doesn't really work very well. That's sort of repressing and suppressing. Or if you try to just do some temporary fix, you know, you do some fix with, what is that called, duct tape. So our material desires are really, what they're really indicative of is our genuine eternal spiritual needs. And if we understand them as material desires, and if we try to satisfy them with something that's both not satisfying and satiating, well, of course, they're going to keep hankering again. They haven't been dealt with. But all of our material desires are all, they're all really pointing to needs that are ultimately spiritual. And therefore, when you satisfy them spiritually, then the material desires naturally go away. They're dealt with. All material desires, I mean, but different people have different understandings of what we mean by a material desire. If you want to think of it superficially, you know, I desire a new car, or I desire to paint my wall a new color, or I wish my wife would stop nagging me, or something like that, you know, or I wish I could get rid of my chronic painful disease and have a healthy body. So those, if we think of material desires that way, or if we think of material desires on a deeper level, that what am I looking for? You know, I'm looking for peace. I'm looking for harmony. I'm looking for satisfaction. I want to do things that are meaningful. I'm looking for appreciation and recognition, consideration, respect. I'm looking for joy, adventure. You know, if we start going to the deeper things, you'll find that all of those are spiritual. I mean, even the desire for a healthy body. Why do we have that desire? Because we have a spiritual body that's eternally youthful and full of vitality and energy and never has any degeneration. That's a desire for sat. It's a desire for the sandini shakti. That's what it is. And that's a genuine desire of the soul. You know, if I want my wife to stop nagging me, what am I really desiring? I'm desiring consideration and respect and communication and appreciation and harmony and love. And but all of those exist in my home in Goloka Vrindavan. It's my natural, what's the fish out of water? You know, if the fish is out of water, the idea is not to suppress the desire to be in the water. The solution is to go back in the water. That nagging desire that we're feeling on the land is to remind us You're in the wrong place. You're in the wrong place. You don't want to suppress it. You want to actually satisfy it. There's no suppression and repression of material desires. It doesn't go anywhere because what's powering those desires is spiritual. It's coming from the soul, so it'll come up again. You want to go back and actually go back to the root, like Lord Brahma was going through the lotus flower, trying to find out where the end was. You want to go back to the origin. What's the origin of all this? The origin of all this is that I want Satchitananda. That's what I really want. So if that's what I really want, then let me find a way where I can really get it. Prabhupada would say our real self-interest. And then the desire to have it in some reflection will automatically disappear. You know, it will just be gone. When you have $1,000, all your $10 problems are solved. If I start realizing that I have an eternal spiritual body, then whether or not my material body is experiencing pain or pleasure or health or disease becomes very irrelevant. I actually become hardly even aware of it. I'm aware of it only insofar as to make practical dealings. But otherwise, it's basically inconsequential. And when I'm aware of my eternal home, then, you know, I'm still aware of what needs to be done in my physical home in terms of I'm still responsible to fix things. But it's not very consequential. It's not very meaningful to me. If I'm aware of my eternal relationship with Krishna and with Krishna's devotees, which is fully satisfying, then if people in this world are inconsiderate or disrespectful or unappreciative or whatever, I may be aware of it, but it's not very meaningful or important to me because I'm already getting all those desires satisfied from within. So this is very nicely explained in the sixth chapter of Bhagavad Gita, that if one is having pleasure within, enjoying the self, to relish and rejoice in the self, Krishna says, the real self. Then he says, this is actual freedom from all miseries caused by material conflict, by material contact. So that's the way you deal with material desires. You find out what's the root of that desire, and you actually satisfy it at the root. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, just trying to forget about it, that's, you know, impersonalism or Buddhism.
Mm-hmm.
Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm. Oh, of course, yes. That's very good.
So, you know, how to do that practically. So give me an example of a material desire. It doesn't have to be one you have, but just give me an example of some material desire.
Okay, I want a big, fat, juicy, bloody steak.
I want a big, fat, juicy what?
Bloody steak.
A bloody steak. Okay, good. All right, so what's that a desire for? Well, it's a desire for pleasure. It's a desire for happiness. And it's also a desire for connection with life. All of our eating, you know, everything we eat, whether it's vegetarian or non-vegetarian, it's all something that is alive. We're looking for pleasure by having union with life, by joining my life to another life. So what is the origin of that? The origin of that is that I'm looking for pleasure by joining with Krishna, who's the ultimate life. Now, how can I join with Krishna, who's the ultimate life? So I can join with Krishna by offering him the kind of food that he wants and eating his remnants as prasadam. And we all have experienced that by doing that, we lose our desire for some meat. That's a very simple thing.
Okay, I just want to clear, I don't have the slightest desire for that. But, you know.
Exactly, why not? Because the things that are pushing you to have that desire are satisfied. So that's a very good example, because those of us who are practicing Krishna consciousness, my guess is that none of us have the slightest desire to eat meat at all. It's not something that we have to repress or suppress or deny. It's just not there. It's just gone. You know, if any of us were meat eaters before, if we even think about any of the meat that we ate previously, there's no interest. I mean, if anything, there's a revulsion, but it's not like some intense revolt. It's just, why would I want to do that? So why do we feel that way? Because those desires are fully satisfied in a genuine form. We haven't had to oppress it. We've satisfied it genuinely. So all material desires are like that. If you go back to the root and see, what am I really looking for? What am I really looking for? So we were talking about disease. So if one has some disease, naturally, there's a desire. I wish my body was healthy and functioning. I wish I was able and free of pain. I wish I had a body that was full of pleasure and functioning and health and vitality. So where does that come from? It comes from, ultimately, I want to realize my spiritual self. So obviously, sometimes one may have to rest. Sometimes one may have to take medicine or go to the doctor, or we have to deal with those things. But if we're obsessing about, I've got to become healthy, 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 then simply we'll take another body eventually that's healthy. Our obsession should be, how can I revive my spiritual form? How can I revive my spiritual form? How can I be in a situation where I actually have that eternality? And then the pushing to have a healthy, pain-free, able body will decrease. It just won't be that important anymore. It won't be that much of a factor in one's life. One will be getting one's happiness from within. That is the only ultimate solution to material desires.
Thank you.
Anything else?
I have a comment I could make. It's along the lines of what we were talking earlier about physical pain and psychological pain. This is Russell G. Prabhu in Waikiki. A few years back, I had the occasion of being in a dental office getting some dental work done, surgery and implants and like that. And so there were two kind of pains that I was faced with. And the first one, the physical pain, they address with the narcotic Demerol or Novocaine, whatever they used. But the other was the psychological, the anxiety I was facing. And so I remedied that by putting on a set of earphones like we all have on now and a CD with Srila Prabhupada chanting nice sweet bhajans. So I redirected my mind, and instead of sitting there and kind of in fearful anxiety about for the next 2 hours is all this stuff going on and weird sounds and this and that, my attention was on Srila Prabhupada. It's like here we are in this class, and prior to the class beginning, I have anxiety. I'm just in a state in my life where there's things going on that are causing anxiety. But as soon as I have a Krishna Katha in my ear, as you are all speaking, anxiety tends to go away. You know, and we're focusing our mind on Krishna and his teaching, Srila Prabhupada. So that's how I'm coping with it. There's, if you're going into any kind of medical procedure, dental, like whatever, take a CD and put on the earphones. And even they have goggles. You can watch a movie, you know, put on a DVD, something. They have these things, and so it works. I recommended them to both all the dentists that worked on me. They were all females. It was down in Thailand, and they appreciated it. They thought they might incorporate that because they saw the difference it made in me as a patient, just breezing through it, because I wasn't focused on what they were doing. I was focusing my mind on Krishna.
That's also, by the way, effective for physical pain, and I've had practical experience of it. What I found is that if you're trying to stop the body processes, that's a little harder to do. But if you're trying to transcend, if you're willing to let the body go through whatever it's going to go through, and you want to transcend, that can also be done through mental adjustment. And that's it's an art that can be learned. And even materialistic people can do that. You know, I've personally met people who had surgery without anesthesia, which is what Prabhupada refers to in teachings of Lord Kapila, just by making an adjustment in their minds. They were not religious people. They were not pious people. So we can also do that. And the reason we can do that is that all of our pleasure and pain is not actually happening to us. That's why we can do that.
This is Carla Petit.
Yes, Haribo.
Haribo, Prabhu. My mother actually has had a number of surgeries. She called it glove anesthesia. She was trained to be able to transcend pain, actually have cesarean sections with no anesthesia, nothing whatsoever, other than this mental technique. She's taught me different pressure points also, like for headache, where you can press. And, I mean, there's a whole material science around that. But even on a material point of view, by focusing on the pain, it increases. But if you can distract yourself, I know when I used to get shots or acupuncture, I would tell the doctor, the person administering, please just talk to me, distract me, or let's have a conversation. Because the more I was focused on what they were doing, the more it hurt. Perception of hurt. But if I wasn't thinking about it, it just didn't affect me. But
yes,
I also closely relate to the point about transcending through sound vibration, transcendental sound vibration. That's the very, very best. And I also have some really practical experience of that. Some accidents, different things that have happened to me. Chanting makes all the difference in the world. Or hearing. Wonderful.
Well, thank you very much. All glories to Srila Prabhupada.
Jai Haribo.
Jai Haribo. All glories to Srila Prabhupada.
All glories to Srila Prabhupada.
Thank you, everyone. Hare Krishna.